I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. Today's guest is Matt Stickland. He's got PTSD. Let's talk about it.
You know how Johnny Depp has like, you know, is it a mustache?
Look, I'm Johnny
and he's
Depp,
got a goatee.
Pretty much, okay?
It's more like
he's got
Orlando
separate,
Bloom. Orlando
Bloom. His facial hair is separated.
You're so humble.
Is Orlando Bloom still a thing?
I think he's still alive.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure
he's still alive, but like...
Is he still relevant?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. He did a love story movie.
I don't know, is Lord of the Rings still a thing?
I think yes. Pretty sure that
see, then
they...
There's Orlando Bloom.
Well, I mean, it still exists.
Just like Orlando Bloom still alive.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
But he's not really current anymore.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings is relevant
maybe
the same
is,
way
maybe
Orlando
some
Bloom is.
Really great movie.
This is a very informative conversation.
Yeah, it
I
is.
Must say. Speaking of all of that, let's come back to Matt.
Yeah,
Matt, what's up? How you doing?
Doing good.
We know each other.
We do.
Yeah, we know each other like pretty well, I would say.
I think technically we're in-laws, maybe.
Yeah. Well, wait. Are you guys engaged?
No. Well, common law.
Common law. Okay.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Like in the eyes of the law, we're in-laws.
You are. Okay. Cool. So yeah, you're my sister-in-law's partner, common law partner.
No. Brother-in-law. I'm your brother-in-law.
You're my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that how it works? Okay.
I think
cool.
so.
Sweet.
You're married to my girlfriend's sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Matt and I know each other through that same relationship.
That same relationship.
Correct. Yeah.
I just met Matt actually. Not that you guys cared or asked me, but I just thought I'd add that in.
The natural progression would have been to go to you next.
It made sense for you to chime in
okay,
and say that.
Well, I just wanted to add that. So.
Sure.
Just so you know.
Thanks, Brian.
One thing that I didn't know about you, Matt, was that I didn't know until quite recently, was that you suffer from PTSD.
I do, yeah. And the reason you didn't know is because I... hide it. I try and hide it as best I can, actually.
Yeah, interesting. So, what does PTSD stand for?
PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a lot of... Like, Afghanistan happened for a really long time, like 14 years now, I think. It's still kind of going on with the Americans.
Yeah,
I can't believe that it's been that long. Like, it doesn't seem like it's been 14
It's because it's been the war of our generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so it's been going on for a really long time, and a lot of people have come home just like seriously fucked up from it. So there's been a lot of research into PTSD and like the causes of PTSD and what PTSD is. And they just recently released the new volume of like diagnostic for all psychological diagnoses. And PTSD is now kind of, it used to be just like, your stereotypical, you know, you watch a war movie and these guys go through some serious shit and it's like, oh, those guys have PTSD. And then they, if it's Band of Brothers, you see the interviews afterwards and they are talking about it. And like 60 years later, 70 years later, they're still tearing up. And that's kind of like the default, what everyone thinks PTSD is. And that's still true. Like, so, but it's kind of split now. There's the fear-based one where you're like, I've gone through a really like, extreme scenario I feared for my life and you come back messed up. And there's also the other side of it too now where it's they're calling it a moral injury where you kind of see yourself as a good person and then you go, it's generally to war. I don't know if a moral injury applies to like the civilian side of things. You go do something that kind of doesn't jive with your belief of yourself as a good person.
With your, like, core values.
Yeah, pretty much. And then that messes you up to the same scope. And then they kind of, it's pretty personal depending on, like, what you actually went through. But then the symptoms kind of meet up again after that branch. And then you just,
And that's what you're going, and you're, and are you on the moral side of things?
Yeah, I'm the moral injury side of things.
So yeah, so you're talking about the military. You're talking about you're referring to people as civilians, yeah. which not many people do. So I guess what do you do? What do you do for a living?
So I'm in the Navy. I was in the surface fleet for 6 years, and then I specialized and went subs. After 6 years, and then so I've been in now a total of 8 years.
And you're not talking about subs like working in the rec hall and making artist?
No.
Would you consider yourself a sandwich artist?
An artisan.
There is a certain amount of artistry that goes into driving submarines.
Oh, submarine. Holy shit. Oh, okay. Oh my God.
No, so I never actually, I got like halfway qualified in submarines, but I didn't, my progress in my naval career kind of got stalled. As I dealt with, still am dealing with the fallout of deploying on the Charlottetown, which was a surface ship that went to Libya.
Let's just take it back to the start. First, you mentioned that you've been trying to hide it.
Yeah.
How long has it been that you knew something was up?
So 2011, the fall of 2011, we came back from Libya.
How long were you?
We were there. We left in March. We came back in September. 6 months, almost exactly to the day, I think. March 2nd, September 2nd.
Was that like Gaddafi height?
Yeah. That's why we were there.
Okay.
Yeah, so we did that, and I came back, and then it was sometime in the winter, Christmassy maybe, maybe slightly after Christmas, where I realized I was drinking a lot. And
I drink so much at Christmas time.
No, but it was like from September to Christmas and Christmas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And like then, when the Christmas decorations start coming out though.
Well, what, so like it's June? Like,
what I'm saying. Like that's when Jeremy starts drinking.
Well,
and then continues on it again.
Well, come on now. Rein it back in.
Yeah. So after, I don't know, whatever that is, 5 months or so, I was like, I think I might have a problem with drinking. I hadn't fully realized what was going on. Cause like I was drunk like the whole time.
And were you like an aggressive drunk or like an emotional drunk or a mixture of both?
Mainly emotional. I was like sitting in my house alone, like avoiding contact with everyone.
And then like after a significant period of time of you going, I might have a problem with drinking. Is it around that time that you realize that might be connected to something else? Or is there a bout of dealing with drinking specifically before something else comes around or a new realization?
So I went in for help. I went to the military's got like your unit has a medical, like a doctor. So I went into the doctor and I was like, look, I'm not okay. I'm drinking a lot. I don't know what's up. I need to figure out what's going on. And she was like, yeah. And then she started asking me other questions like, about irritability, anger, stress, avoidance, thoughts of suicide, and all that other good stuff. And I was just like, yeah, yes to like all of those things. And she's like, okay, so we're going to go get you see someone right now. So I got referred to the substance people to help with the drinking part and also to like get psychological help immediately. And then there's a little bit of...
So they don't fuck around with that. They're like...
not even a little bit.
Okay.
Well, that's probably such an issue with the age of Afghanistan that, you know, they check those boxes and they go, okay, this is the procedure starts now.
Yeah. And at the time I was in subs too. Like, so I was posted to a submarine. And so I was seeing like a submarine doctor and doctors who had dealt with a lot of the submarine community. And if you Google this Canadian submarine service, there's like a couple of incidents where like there was a fire on the Chicoutimi when she across. There was Cornerbrook ran aground. So like mental health issues in the submarine service is not new.
When we first met, I remember actually before we met, my wife had told me, oh yeah, Liz is dating this guy. And I was like, oh, that's nice. What does he do? She's like, he like drives submarines or something. And I was like, that is the most terrifying sounding job in the world. I'm not that claustrophobic, You know, I would say I have like very mild claustrophobia. Like if I had like three people sitting on me, I'd lose it.
Yeah.
But like I can be in a small space. I can be in a tight space. I cannot begin to fucking comprehend even just stepping into a submarine that's like lift it, hoist it out of the water, and just like there.
Oh, that's
repairs.
Terrifying. That is terrifying.
Yeah, I guess that would be kind of fucked up. It shouldn't be. Yeah,
it's
should
made in the water. Yeah.
It's made to be underneath.
Like they are so heavy.
But
and
like,
then, like
it, how
sitting
small
up
is
on
it
the block
in there? Like I'm
okay. So picture camping with like 60 of your closest friends in two double decker buses.
Oh my god! Like it makes me.
I can see it on your face.
It makes me queasy.
Is there a feeling of like camaraderie though?
Oh yeah.
Because
yeah.
So you must be really tight with those people.
Yeah. So like the first, there's two stages to getting your submarine qualification. And, the first one is getting the dolphins. And like the official part is like, can you demonstrate enough knowledge to, you know, be safe on a submarine? And the other,
like not snap and lose it on everybody. That kind of say like,
no,
like be able to.
Well, you don't really know that until you go to sea. And there are some people that just can't handle it. And then it's like, all right, see you later, man.
Like safety training.
Like where do you let them out? You can't just like pull over.
Well, if they're like, freaking out that bad, they'll just be like sedated and put in the rack. And then when we come
along. Is that like common practice?
God. No, because no one generally freaks out that badly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
But like you can tell when someone's uncomfortable, they're just like looking up all the time.
Oh, right. Wow. Looking up. Of course.
Well, that's where the water is.
You're not going to look down.
Yeah.
I'd be looking everywhere.
Okay. So when you go on like a tour like that and you come back, is tour the right word to use?
Yeah, tour, deployment, whatever.
Okay. So if you're on a deployment and you come back, what are you generally doing when you get back here? Are you kind of just going to the barracks or going to wherever until your next deployment?
When you deploy, you get time off. Time off to prepare for your deployment, and then like you get about a month ish of leave, kind of like annual and pre-deployment leave.
Right. So that must be like that's my question. There is you go away and you're in the middle of all this action. Your probably mind is consumed by the day to day tasks. That I'm sure it's wake up in the morning and pretty much go until you go to bed. I don't know if that's right, but that's what I'm picturing.
It's actually like super. It's boring. There's a lot of, it becomes so routine so quickly. It's just a lot of boredom and then two or three moments where you're just like, wah, and then back to boredom.
Okay, so you were saying, so there's a lot of boredom, but earlier you were saying that, especially in submarines, there's a high amount of like stress and a high amount of people who suffer, like traumatically suffer after coming back?
No. Like, so PTSD is like, extraordinary events.
Okay.
So, like, if you go to sea, I got PTSD on the surface, like, before I went down to subs. And then so, like...
By God, do you mean the trigger, like, the event?
Yeah, the event.
Okay.
Yeah. So it, like, we deployed with 330 some odd people, and on that trip, only two of us now have that I know of have PTSD.
Yeah.
Out of 330 some odd.
And is it, would you be wrong in thinking that there are probably quite a few others that just
like bury it,
that bury that, or
that's hard to say. Cause the way like Navy deployments are different than Army deployments. Like if your unit is in a firefight in the Navy, it's not as intense for everyone involved. There's only like a handful of people that are involved in pretty much anything that happens.
Because you're firing ammunition like from the ship. It's not like man-to-man. It's not man-to-man combat. And
yeah. And like, so
and also everybody else, there's so many other different jobs on the ship to keep the ship running.
Yeah.
Whereas the people who are making the decisions to like, you know, like shoot the guns or whatever.
Yeah. They're not. So like
there's
we
only
got
a handful of them.
We got shot at one time from like a shore-based missile. Battery and we
from a Libyan one,
pro Gaddafi forces. And I slept through it,
like, wow.
Oh, shit.
I slept through Hurricane Juan and I thought that was impressive.
Well, because the ship never we like they splashed behind us and then the ship just kind of sped up and turned and turned away. And then so we were on the edge of their effective range and then we turned out of their effective range, but then someone fell down the ladder trying to like get into the ship.
One of the bad guys.
Like, no, sorry. One of our guys was working out on the flight deck. We got shot at, and then in his haste to make it into the ship, fell down the ladder.
Okay.
So the ship sped up, turned away, and the pipe that came over the broadcast system wasn't, you know, everyone go to action stations because we're being shot at. It was, we have a casualty. So I woke up, and I was like, oh, casualty. And then I went back to sleep.
Casualty as he died? No,
casualty is just injury. Just
injury. And that's why you wouldn't have reacted with like a, oh, shit, like, somebody's fucking really fucked up. You probably just thought that, like, oh, he's just
an accident.
I was like, we're going really fast. He probably had a heart attack.
Right.
I didn't have
the knowledge that you were being actually attacked.
How I just knew that we were going fast, 20 plus knots.
Which kilometers?
50, 60 miles an hour.
Okay.
Oh, shit. That's
on a boat? On a big ass boat?
Wait, no, like hold on. That's wrong. That's wrong. Because I don't know.
Alice, Google it.
Man, sorry. I should know this is like literally part of my job.
Dude. It's okay. You have PTSD and you're no longer, you don't want to be in the military anymore. Don't worry about it. Don't put your brain through the stress.
Nobody's testing on you on this. Okay, let's go back to the PTSD then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. So I'm curious to know. So this is another one of those things, right? This is another one of those things that I don't know anything about. I don't know much about PTSD. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening right now who don't know about PTSD.
Okay.
And because me and you have never talked about this personally, like outside of this room right now, we've never really chatted about it.
If I'm honest, this is the first time I've ever talked about it sober.
So that's fucking crazy.
Sorry, outside of therapy.
Outside of therapy. Okay. So having said that, is it okay for me to ask you what the event was that the catalyst for your trauma?
And I have no problem answering that. However, it does, like, that might be something beneficial to maybe like do at the end and then like throw it into here.
Because you don't want to go through that
pretty much other things afterwards.
Okay.
So, like, I will totally answer that question.
Is that how you would like to do that? Would you rather do that?
That should be, like, the last thing. You can put it wherever, but that should be the last thing that I actually have to do productively for this podcast.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, then that's what we'll do.
Okay.
So,
what were you going to say?
No, you go ahead. Well, I got the results here, thanks to our new assistant, Alice, sitting over in the corner. 20 knots is
30 kilometers an hour.
37.04 kilometers per hour.
Nice.
I did that backwards.
That's about as fast as Usain Bolt can run, I think. Is that as fast as he can run? That guy's fucking fast. He probably can run faster than that.
On water?
I think it is faster.
On water.
Yeah. He just hits the water and his velocity just skips him right across. I think that the conversation around the how you can get PTSD in those two ways of, you know, having like a really traumatic, like you were saying the other day, like visceral experience versus that moral. I find that that's fascinating. And I don't hear in this, like I was saying before, this age of Afghanistan, you don't hear so much about that moral side of things, much more so about the, like, I saw somebody,
like the sniper who took a dude's head off and watched it happen.
You hear that. So you hear that all the time. And I find that other side of thing, the moral, like that, I find that makes so much sense and you're in, because you're a part of a machine or a company or that is making a decision that you're a part of.
Yep.
And being even in the vicinity of that decision or what's going on is affecting you.
The two things in that really kind of bothered me the most was that, it wasn't me, like, I was the part of the machine that made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the big thing. Like, cause so it wasn't just like, oh, you know, we as a group were responsible for it's, I personally did this thing.
Okay. And again, we don't have to go to that specific place until later on.
I can't remember. There was something else I wanted to say there, but I forgot what it was.
Well, he was talking about maybe it has to do with the contrast between someone who's like seen something visceral versus
I remember now.
Okay, cool.
So when you go through an experience like that, where it's like your decision, in my case, your decision to do something, or you go to a, you're in an experience where you are super afraid, it is completely normal to be messed up about it. Mm-hmm. So the normal guideline is like from, so if, when you're on deployment, it's like coming back to 3 months is kind of like the normal time where you're allowed to be fucked up about it and have it be normal.
Okay.
Like medically, like that's the like they say, oh yeah, you're going to go do this fucked up shit and then you're going to come home and just give yourself 3 months. And if you're not over it in 3 months, well, come see us.
No. Well, if you go for help before three, like you might need help to get through it before then, but like, before 3 months, it won't be a PTSD diagnosis.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You need to be like, you need to be suffering from symptoms for a longer period of time.
Yeah, some like buffer time to let it sit.
I can't remember if it's, I think it's from 6 months to a year, it's adjustment disorder. And then after that is PTSD. Like, it's still bothering you.
Can we just take a second? Did everyone see that George Carlin bit about correctness and
maybe
shell
we should
shock.
Keep calling it shell shock. Yeah,
and just like get past the try not to like let everything be. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny that you say that too, because like they're trying to stop calling it PTSD. The psychology for VA. I don't know who's putting this pressure on, but someone is putting the pressure on the Psychology Association to change it from PTSD, because the D stands for disorder. So there's a lot of guys who don't really understand, like they just hear disorder and they're like, oh, can I pass it down to my kids? Because they're worried like it's a disorder,
if it's
and
like hereditary.
Yeah. Or, and the other half of that is they're worried that like there's a stigma attached to PTSD, and that if you are calling it a disorder, it's kind of like, you know, something is inherently wrong with you. Whereas if you call it an injury, then it's like caused by something and it's not a personal weakness.
Do you know what the name is that they're sort of trying to push forward?
No idea.
What would you like it to be?
I really don't care.
I have a question. Ask your question, but I do want to take it back to.
I have a question about it being. Oh, I lost my train of thought. I had a question about. Sorry.
Choo choo. I'm gonna just do this.
Jumping in.
But I'm sorry that I lost your question, but we've been.
Oh, I remember. Okay. I remember. I got this.
Awesome.
I hope we don't cut this.
I'm going to. Every time go. Okay. Go. Don't let him lose his question.
Yeah. It's fading. It's fading every
second. Just go. Just go.
Stop laughing. Go.
I was gonna ask you, is there.
Oh, I have a. You know what? Before you say that, I just want.
You know, every time you guys say that you're going to cut it out, you always leave it in the podcast.
He's so pissed. No, at me.
Okay.
Sorry,
honestly,
Taylor, go for it. No,
go,
you got it. You got it. I can see it. It's there. Say it.
I can't remember the whole question now.
Oh, fuck.
It had to do with that when you were talking about it being a disorder, and can I pass it down to my kids? As far as you know, that's the question coming back to me now. As far as you know, is it something that is floating around, like you can be more susceptible to trauma if somebody in your family has had it, or is it something that is super unique and onset dependent on the individual or the experience that an individual goes through?
If you're raised by gay parents, will you be gay?
No.
It's completely individual.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. And that's what I thought the answer was, but I wanted to just so that we kind of like hit the nail on the head with that.
Yeah, because I mean, there's people that do go to war and
are
do
totally
some
fine.
Super, yeah. Super crazy thing. Like that guy, American Sniper, that guy, I don't know if he suffers from PTSD, but well, in the movie,
they were saying that he was.
Yeah,
they were hinting that
the way they portrayed him in the movie, that his character in the movie did for sure.
But the way he portrayed himself in the book or spoke about himself in like the public eye seemed to be a very different.
I don't know. I didn't know what he was all about in the media or in his book.
Sure.
From what I had seen, I think you're right, but the movie certainly portrayed him as, I mean, when he's like at home sitting in front of the TV.
I think that's why a lot of people have issues with the movie, because they were like,
this guy was acting like he was so super proud.
So yeah. What a great movie. So I wanted to
dude, say, just why are you so yeah. why are you so cranky?
Relax,
just go
bro.
With the fucking conversation.
No, I am, but we were talking about something like 30 minutes ago, I think, that I just want to bring it back to.
Okay.
Which is our guest who is here today, Matt's experience with PTSD. So I just want to come back to that. We were talking about you going into basically talk about substance abuse, right?
Yeah.
Initially, and then where did it go from there?
So after that, I went to see a psychiatrist, and a psychologist, and a priest. There's like a whole...
And is a priest a requirement?
No, it isn't.
Or is it suggested?
That would be very weird if it was and you were like atheist.
You know what? Like, in some rehabs, religion is required. Like some rehab...
The 12-step program revolves around...
Yeah, exactly.
I thought AA was entirely religious organization.
AA is.
Or religious-based anyway. Yeah. But yeah, no, so it's not a requirement. But they have a team of like... most OSI, operational stress injury clinics, will have a team. And so my team was the substance use psychologist, psychiatrist, another psychologist, like a trauma psychologist, I guess, one that wasn't specifically for substance, and the priest as well. And the way the priest kind of got into there was, or padre, I guess, because that's what we call him in the military, but...
That's Spanish. That guy's name? Or that's
Spanish for father.
No, that's like...
Isn't it?
I think that's a baseball team.
It is baseball. San Diego?
Padre.
Yeah. Wait, is that
Padre is Spanish for father.
But is it just like you that's and your buddies in the military? Just, or like that's literally what the military
that's
is like?
That's what we in the military call the religious people.
Padres.
Yeah.
Like how hey, Jeremy Padre, calls headphones cans.
Cans.
Yeah, it's jargon.
It's jargon. Jargon that no one cares about like when
how,
you're talking to
like
Jeremy.
Like how Brian calls boobs tatas.
I think really? It suits them, yeah. Of course. Especially when they have little hats on. Tassels.
Brian's a closet misogynist.
Not so closet.
Not so closet anymore.
Yeah. I should be
Did
on
you
for
guys
my
see
illness,
those tatas back misogyny. There?
No, I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, so...
Padres.
Yeah, so I went to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist was like... We talked about... Because psychiatrists then... their big role in therapy is generally drugs to counteract your various symptoms. Like there's an old blood pressure drug that they give you for nightmares, for example.
Right.
Cool. Antidepressants, sleep aids, like that type of the narcotic approach, I guess, to PTSD.
I've never heard of that before. There's a heart pressure. What'd you say?
Yeah. So a blood pressure.
A blood pressure drug that like negates. Bad dreams?
Yeah, I think so. I only ever used it once because it made me feel super weird.
If it's for regulating your blood pressure and you have no blood pressure issues, what's that doing to your...
Well, one of the side effects is it lets you sleep without dreams. So if your crazy. Nightmares are really bad, you can take this and then you won't have nightmares.
This is in that kind of phase that they're calling the adjustment phase, then?
Yeah, so this was still when it was adjustment disorder.
Okay.
And then they do...
What was it like? Like, were you feeling kind of relieved to be in a program or be, like, to be seeking help? Or was it still really bothering you?
Yes, both of those things. It was good to know that, like, to find out why, for example, I was drinking a lot. I think I always kind of knew, but I was drinking to kind of not think about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you go through, like, the big thing for PTSD is therapy, which means talking about it a lot. So I was not super excited for that part.
And that you found that you, that was a hard.
Yeah, it still is now.
How did, was it something that you saw in yourself that wanted you to go in and kind of seek out help from within the forces? Or was it like relationships or family that suggested something? Were you living on your own at the time?
I had just gotten out of a terrible relationship and I was like, oh, you know, I'm drinking because I was in a terrible relationship.
Right.
And
do you think that was part of that too? Or do you think it was...
It could have been. I don't know. It all kind of rolled into...
Because I can imagine if you were, if you had PTSD, I mean, that's got to have an effect on your relationships.
Oh, yeah.
It has to.
And especially if you don't really want to talk about it either. Like,
yeah.
I tried to tell my family about it once. But I don't...
How do you bring that up?
I don't know, poorly. It didn't go well.
Not good.
So I was home for... So it would have been before Christmas, because I was home for Christmas. So I went for help right before Christmas.
Right.
And at that point, I don't think I really grasped the severity of the situation. And then so I wasn't able to convey the severity of the situation.
Until you flipped the Christmas table with the turkey on it?
No, I didn't flip the Christmas table.
And jumped out the window?
That would have been awkward.
Naked.
Naked. Right there with you, buddy.
Yeah, okay. No, so I didn't know the severity of the situation. Really, I didn't grasp it. So I wasn't able to convey that. I was just able to convey that I was upset.
Yeah.
Right. And then so my parents were like, why are you throwing away a good career? Because you're upset. And I was like, fuck you. You don't understand.
So you're telling them, like, I got to get out of the military. This, like, something.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not having a good time. I need to get out of the military.
But that's, like, and again, right? Like, so you don't know that. You're not using this term PTSD in your head, right?
No.
They don't realize.
I wasn't even using adjustment disorder at that time, or anything.
Yeah. And they just think you're being cranky.
Yeah,
so,
pretty much.
So they say things like, oh, cheer up, buttercup.
Yeah.
And you're like, which I'm sure
it's a stable job in this economy.
I'm sure that goes directly against like how you're supposed to communicate with someone who's dealing with that.
Yeah.
It's just a total shit show.
I think that's the hardest thing about this, though, is that there is that phase where you don't know that that person is dealing with something like that. And I think it spreads across all mental illness. There's a time where they're undiagnosed. And it, like when Nadine, when we talked to her about bipolar, she said that it goes on for an average of like 8 years.
8 years. Like that's fucking
until it's
crazy.
Diagnosed. And it's crazy because you can't go through life walking down the street thinking that everybody's got a mental illness. It's just ridiculous. But at the same time, when people are reacting what you would kind of classify as being not normal, then you should use like respect that they're behaving that way and that you don't know what they're dealing with.
Never know what anyone's dealing with. But at the same time, it's just such a, like, that's what makes mental illness such a crazy fucking thing, is because it can go undiagnosed for so long, and because it is directly linked with like your mood and how you interact with people, and which is what you do day to day, that just the smallest thing of being someone saying something to you can just set you off or
oh man,
you know,
my emotions are like right at the they're right at the front of everything I do now.
I'm thinking the equivalent for me would be just like someone not knowing I have CF coming up to me, taking a huge drag off a cigarette, grabbing my mouth, opening it, plugging my nose, and blowing into my throat. Like that's
like I did last week.
Which I'm pretty sure will probably never happen in my life, right?
Okay.
So that's what is blowing my mind right now.
I may have done that to you on New Year's Eve, actually. Yeah.
But Matt, one of the challenging things sorry, Taylor.
Oh, that's okay, Brian. Just you get to your question first.
I'm just going to keep going with it.
Sure. You're all listening to Sick Boy just fall apart. This is it. this is the last episode.
One of the things that I imagine is challenging is that did you have days in this period that were really good and that you just felt happy, or you experienced something that was great? Or was it just like a constant depression?
Was it ups and downs, or was it?
No, it was mostly down.
Oh man.
Was there any days where you were out with people and they could have kind of thought that things were good? Or do you think it was?
Oh, always, man. I became so pro at hiding it.
Right.
Like, I was so good.
Yeah, you developed
I think
your...
I was really good at hiding it. Think... I really don't actually know. I don't have an unbiased source for that.
Do you think it weighed heavier on you because you were trying to hold it in?
It did. And so I just tried to avoid doing things. Like, ooh. I didn't leave my house much.
Right.
Yeah.
I let all my hobbies kind of just go away. I just didn't maintain them. Didn't maintain anything.
When we were talking about all mental illnesses and how they are all that length of time that it takes for somebody to be diagnosed, like when we were talking to ADD in that 8-year span that you could go undiagnosed because it's so hard to pinpoint. This is kind of two questions. Related to that, did you, being in the military, although you're leaving the military, are you thankful that you had that organization to be there with those procedures in place?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it was different like when Afghanistan first started or whatever. But the support structure now in the military is unreal. In my experience, was unreal.
Yeah.
Very supportive, very responsive, very fast.
Yeah, because now, we don't
do you
hear...
have to say that because you were in the military and no. you don't want them to come get you?
I don't have to say that. If okay. if I had a negative experience, I would have been like, yeah, no, they have treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have been very vague. Because although PTSD is, of course, not limited to people in the military, even though pop culture leads us, a lot of people, to believe that it is.
I think our, statistically, our instances in the military are higher.
I'm sure they are. I'm Probably sure they are. For sure. I'm sure it is. But
it's pretty bad in real estate, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so is teaching yoga.
But, let's say somebody has an event that catalyzes... Is that the right word?
I'm with you.
Catalyzes?
I'm with you. Keep going. Yep.
That's like a catalyst for PTSD.
So it would traumatize you?
A traumatic experience. There we go. We're on the right track. But that support system isn't there for somebody to go, okay, well, you just got back from this experience. So over the next 3 months, monitor, come and see us. Then that might be a super long drawn out process for them to be.
I have no idea.
No, but I'm sure that it is because of that support system, yeah. Which is why I asked the question about the military having that support system. The other question that I wanted to ask was, over this time that you're noticing this developing or you're kind of going through the diagnosis of this, are you noticing, what are the physical manifestations of what's happening?
Drinking, substance abuse is a big one. That can just kind of be put under avoidance behavior. Like a lot of people, it doesn't necessarily need to be drinking or drugs. Like you can just, if you have an internet addiction, you will just spend all your time on the internet instead of drinking or whatever.
Okay.
So for me, it was drinking. Depression is a big thing. A lot of the stuff that goes along with depression, suicidal thoughts, all that other good stuff.
How deep did that go?
It was pretty bad for me for a while.
Yeah.
There was a time where I was like, I need to get out of the military. I don't want to tell anyone, so I should probably just hurt myself to do that.
And did you ever come to the point of actually
causing
any physical harm? Or
I couldn't figure out a way to do it in a controlled way that would also look like an accident.
Right.
And that was like the only thing that stopped me, which is ridiculous that I got that far. And that is like, that's the thing I'm worried about, it looking realistic.
And when you were feeling like that, did you feel like, this might be a dumb question, but did you feel like you were in a clear headspace and that you were like, or that did you just feel like really clouded in your,
it was a means of escape. Of escaping what I was dealing with.
Well, to be able to like shake your head at that and go, well, that was, is awesome.
Well, the whole thing, like, so a couple of the other symptoms are like nightmares is a big one. Those are just shitty and they affect your sleep.
Mm-hmm. Which is then in turn, affecting your day-to-day
experience.
Yeah,
once your sleep goes, it's like everything goes
downhill.
There was 2 days last week where I slept very little and I was out of sorts. And so I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So I did that.
I'm glad you followed it up with that.
Oh, I'm not like, bro. I'm not like, dude, yeah, right there with you.
Oh, I can relate. I slept for four hours on Monday. And then Tuesday, I slept for 5, but I was woken up in the middle of the night.
There's a ton of university students listening to this like, I have PTSD. I wrote 3 midterms this week and slept for like 2 hours.
Took Adderall the entire time.
Yeah, so that sucks. And so I should also explain what I actually did in the Navy, because this is really relevant to like the next.
If you ruin my vision of you driving submarines,
I'm just going to describe the surface. So on the surface world, you're the officer of the watch, so you're in charge of the ship.
That sounds like something from Game of Thrones.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Officer of the watch.
Yeah, of course.
He gave me this stink eye like, no, it fucking doesn't.
I'm just...
Like, man. You're Jon Snow.
No, but you could have picked Battlestar Galactica.
I could have,
Star Trek Master and Commander, all of those things.
My thought went straight to
the watch. Yeah, as soon as you said Officer of the Watch.
I was picturing the A-Team. I don't know why.
You're not a Game of Thrones though guy, though.
Yeah.
I'm like
so,
a Matlock guy or Megan PI.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh man, those shows make me like when I hear the name of Matlock or like Magnum PI or Coronation Street.
Like I would literally rather talk about this than listen to you talk about Magnum PI.
Hold on, let's go to the event. Let's talk about the event
what
right
about,
now.
What about Tom Selleck's mustache though? All right, we won't go there.
Fuck. Okay, so Officer of the Watch.
Yeah. So your job as the Officer of the Watch is to like. You have a schedule that the ship kind of like the things the ship needs to do that day. And so you're the guy kind of liaising with all the departments in the ship to make sure all that happens. And the other big thing you do is look out the windows. The bridge is the only place on the ship that has windows. And that's where you stand watch.
Got a question for you. Or actually,
yeah, go ahead.
Do you know why most windows on boats are circular and not square?
Because they're called portholes, not port squares.
Well, no. Good guess. It's so that when if the ship starts capsizing, when the water comes in, it doesn't hit you square in the face.
That was the worst joke.
Hate you.
My dad told me that joke on a ferry boat.
That makes sense.
Long time
it makes
ago.
That you know I'm what? It makes there. Sense that you and your dad are gonna have two matching tattoos.
Yeah. Don't tell people that.
Everyone knows now. No. Everyone
that's
knows.
That's your penance for that.
Yo,
joke.
That's his fucking choice, not mine.
I've got another boat joke, actually. Do you want a boat joke?
Yeah, please, Matt. Just hold on for a second. Yeah. Go.
It's more about sailing. Well, it's actually about a home on the water. Why didn't the Viking want to live on the water?
I fucking love this joke.
I don't know.
Because he couldn't afford it. I fucking made that joke up.
He made that joke.
On the spot.
I'm not kidding. I've used that joke.
On the spot after 6 hours
of
research.
I give you credit, but I use that joke all the time. I think you're so smart.
I think you're a really funny guy, and I'm really flattered that you use my joke.
Matt, do you want to bro out right now? Because this seems like we've got something on our hands over here.
So, Matt.
Okay.
What are you saying?
So, back to doing the duties as the Officer of the Watch.
Yeah, so your big job is to not hit anything. And you have windows, so you can see if you're going to hit anything. And then...
Now,
so,
did that become apparent after the Titanic? Was everyone like, maybe we shouldn't hit things?
Fun fact about the Titanic, they also had windows.
Huh. Oh, they did. And they could stand... on the tip of the ship.
And fly.
And fly.
I
can fly, Jack.
Okay.
Anyway, so your job really, drive the schedule and look out the window, make sure you don't hit anything.
Wait, were you the iceberg dead ahead guy?
Oh man. Okay.
No, that's the lookout. Yeah. Okay. That guy goes, Holy shit, sir, there's an iceberg dead ahead. And I'll be like, cool. And then I'll turn the ship, and then I'll call the captain. I'll be like, hey, captain, I just saw an iceberg. I turned. Now it's going to miss us by exactly this much at exactly this time. You can go back to sleep. And he's like, yeah, cool, thanks. And hangs up the phone.
Oh, so you would actually, like you would actually do, brain just shit the bed. You would actually like drive the boat. You'd make decisions like that.
You're voice steering. You're like, the boat is like Siri to you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
That's fucking sweet.
Yeah. That is really cool.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
So like your job is the Officer of the Watch. If you're telling someone who isn't in the Navy, you're just like, yeah, so my job is, picture this. You have a bay window in your house. You stand there with a brick around your neck. The brick is the binoculars. Every time a car drives by, you call your wife and you say, hey, a car drove by. And she goes, yeah, great. And then you hang up the phone. And then you do that for 4 hours. Then you wake up 3 hours later, you shower, you shave, and then you go to work in an office from 9 to 5. And then that night you wake up and do it again. Because that's, you also have to do administrative stuff when you're not on the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Honey.
So,
Ford
F-150.
Ford
F-150 just went by.
Yeah.
With Libyan license plates.
No, but...
and
like
a rocket launcher on the back! What do I do?
Yeah, so That's kind of what I was looking for.
Get over there. Yeah,
that's actually kind of what I was looking for. How close are you? I have a question. How close are you guys to shore?
Close.
Within like a distance.
We can see it.
Okay.
Like 20 knots?
Yeah, 20 knots. 20 knots from shore.
20 knots from shore. It's a measurement of speed.
Is it a measure of length? Is it?
No, it's not.
It's a speed. It's a length of rope traditionally, but right, no, it's speed.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, that's what knots is.
Yeah, it's knots and rope, and you throw it over, and you're like, six knots went through, and that's how.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Yeah. They do it in Master and Commander.
Cool. I haven't seen Master and Commander for so long.
Yeah, anyways.
So that was your job. That's what you did on the ship.
So that was my job. And then one of the symptoms of PTSD is paranoia, or at least for me anyway.
Like, oh, God. So every F-150 has a grenade launcher on the back.
No, it was just like I was expecting bad things to happen.
All the time.
And I was getting paranoid that bad things were going to happen. So I was like, we were sitting down watching TV, and then like it would be nighttime and a car would drive by, and I'd be like, all right, they're here now. And then I would get up and be like, someone's going to attack me. I need to be ready.
Mm-hmm. And you mean that as the same metaphor?
Yeah, the wife is sitting next to him. Yeah, and she's like, honey.
Yeah, well, no, sorry. I guess I was living alone at the time, but like.
I'm sorry. I thought we were.
Oh.
No, I thought you were coming back to the metaphorical, like, calling your wife. That situation, this house, you're back on shore.
This actually happened.
Legit life.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Wow.
Okay.
So, like, I'd be like looking out the window and a car would drive by at night and I'd be like, I'm in danger now. And then I would walk around my house, make sure all the doors were locked. And then I would just sit at the window and watch and wait, just to be ready for.
So I have a question. In that sort of paranoia, did you ever like cross the line with another person, maybe a stranger or someone else in your life?
No, because it was only ever at night, only ever alone, and only in my house. Because like, although the whole situation is like super illogical. In my mind, I'm like, if I'm at my house, this is my routine. This is where I would attack someone. So I would learn their routine and then attack them at home. So whenever I don't sleep at home, I'm like, oh, they don't know where I am. I'm safe.
Which is so funny because that kind of goes against our like evolutionary hardwiring. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like home should be safe kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. And generally, that's why a lot of people have a hard time sleeping in hotels or like sleeping at someone's house that they're not used to being is because... Our brain is going, this isn't familiar. This isn't my like cave.
Matt's logic sounds.
Yeah, that discomfort for other people is what made it safe
like,
for me.
When you say that, I'm like, oh, that makes total sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But at the time, like at home, I'm like, this is so stupid. This is stupid. Why am I doing this? And it's like, oh, car. And then I'm right back in it.
Yeah.
So what happened after Christmas?
Where I was.
So you're at the fam's house.
Yeah.
They didn't really quite deal with the situation in the best way possible. I mean,
yeah, I didn't practice.
Granted, they didn't know.
They didn't know. I didn't know. It was just a terrible situation all around. So I left feeling. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yes.
I left feeling terrible.
I don't know why, but I love that.
He just said, I left feeling
this podcast
terrible,
is so raw.
Said, I don't know why, but I love
it. I know,
that.
I'm sorry.
All right. Okay.
If anybody needs to fart, just do it into the mic.
I almost did it the other day, but then I was like, other people use these mics.
Yeah, definitely.
When I own my own mic, I'll fart into it. Anyway, you felt terrible.
We'll label that one.
And then I was alone going through treatment, which is essentially talk therapy. And, so I was alone, freaking out at home at night, going to work. I was just had to show up, really. Like, I had let my bosses know, like, hey, I'm not in a good way. And they're like, yeah, cool, you know, do your thing.
Okay, so when did they definitively diagnose you with PTSD?
That would have been actually relatively recent. Because, like, I was dealing with it for... like within the time frame of adjustment disorder, and I was kind of on the mend at about a year and 4 months. And they're like, oh, you're getting better. It was a bit outside of the scope, but like
it was a year after the 3 month scope.
Yeah, it was like 3 months past the warranty type thing. and they're like, okay, so, you know, because you got better, then, you know, it's adjustment disorder.
And did you feel like that was sufficient?
Yeah, at the
for
time,
you?
It was like I was doing amazing, I was doing great. And then, that's how I got into subs. Like, I went from service to subs. I started doing that training, and then I went to see you on a sub, and I wrote some letters home, like I was writing a letter a day, because there's no Wi-Fi or anything on a sub or whatever. So when we got to where we were going, I sent all of those letters back home to, I was dating Liz at this time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then let's come back to that.
So I sent all of those letters home, and then she got them all at once, but like the day before I arrived back home, and she was like, if I had gotten those on time, I would have thought you had killed yourself. Because they were like, reading them now is like, I was in a very, very bad place. And then I got home, and then my symptoms started returning. My nightmare started coming back. And then I went back and I'm like, look, I'm not okay still.
Oh my God. And see, that's blowing my mind, because that's when we met.
Yeah.
Because when I found out that Liz was dating you, that was when you were deployed.
And that's when I got the PTSD diagnosis.
Okay. Holy fuck.
That
and
probably
I had no
would have
idea.
Been the same,
no
around
idea.
The same time that we met as well,
it,
I think.
It would have been a very
so was that your birthday? Was that your birthday?
So do you remember at his birthday when I was like, hey, can I volunteer to get the exchange because I need to do...
Yeah.
So part of the... I was doing cognitive behavioral therapy, which means you work on your mind and you work on your body. And one of the things that my therapist recommended was do yoga. And so that's why I asked that question.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was...
Fuck, dude.
Two
that wasn't that
years
long.
Ago
yeah, it wasn't
now?
That long ago.
Or
okay, yeah. No, so, that was the most recent birthday.
Matt,
a year
obviously,
ago?
It would have been January.
Yeah,
one of the things that I find really interesting. Okay, there was a date.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I find really interesting about this situation is that you went from before whatever the experience is that you happened, you were very much in a clear head space, and you would consider yourself a normal person. Normal. Anyway, you go through this experience, and then all of a sudden you're feeling different. What can you describe what that felt like?
It's actually not that I feel different. It's that I feel like I should be the same, but my actions indicate that I am not the same. The issue that I have essentially is associating who I am with what I did. So if I could just accept the fact that I have changed, I wouldn't have had an issue. Wouldn't have the issue in the first place.
Do you guys think that maybe we can go into talking about that?
I have two things that I'd like to touch on.
I have one.
Just because of the time.
And I have one.
Did you want to carry on that thought or?
No.
Okay.
The only thing I really want to talk about is the stigma, why I wanted to do this in the first place.
Yeah. Sure. I would love to.
That's a piece that I want to. Yeah.
That's what I kind of wanted to get to with that question too, in the sense that, like, I can't imagine what it feels like. Like, I have no idea, and the best that you can describe it to me will still never make me feel like I have it until if I was to one day experience it myself. And that's where I think the stigma comes from, is the fact that people can't relate to it. And I'm just trying to understand, like, what it is and what that experience is like for you, so that I can better understand it myself, right? To kind of take away the stigma and the taboo that goes with that.
The only thing that I would say for that is, like, don't, like, it's really frustrating to me when people try and empathize with it.
Right.
Because they just can't understand.
Yeah, and, like, I can't even really empathize with it. Because, again, if I could, then I wouldn't be in this whole process in the first place.
Yeah.
So, like, when a lot of people are like, you know, I'm so sorry you had to go through that, and this could just be personal for me, but, like, they're like, I'm so sorry you had to go through that, or, like, oh, the worst for me is, like, someone was like, thank you for doing that for me, and it's like, no, fuck off. Like, just, I'd rather you just, like, oh, driving submarines is cool, can you tell me about that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really want to talk about it.
Right.
Something that came up, something that I remember happening, and I think in this circumstance or in this event happening, I found out that you were dealing with PTSD in this way. And this is a part of this stigma thing, this something that's wrapped up in the stigma of talking about PTSD or mental illness in general, even, is I can't remember exactly what it was. It was something on Facebook. There was a post about something. And I can't remember if it had to do with Sick Boy or something. I can't remember. It was violence, something about violence. And or like rape culture or something. And one of the comments in the thing was like, oh, well, we're just desensitized to it as a
Oh, dude, it was the rape scene from Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's right. And people were upset about the rape scene in Game of Thrones, and it was like, oh, well, if it's not traumatizing to people because now we don't care about it because we've seen it so much that it's like, it's just normal to do that. And you had commented and been like, well, like, does a guy go to war and get desensitized to killing people? Like, I don't think so. No, like, they come home and deal with PTSD and they're messed up.
Super sensitive about it.
And that's that idea that you can just, if you just repetitively do something over and over again, you'll eventually just go,
well,
I'm desensitized to it.
Funny you should say that, because that's essentially what therapy is. You talk about it so much that it's a normalized part of your experience, and it no longer elicits all the anxiety and all the blah, 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 blah.
Because you were saying that if you just accept that you've done something that makes you, that just alters your course in a way, instead of just trying to remain on the same course you're on, then you wouldn't, none of these psychological, none of the psychological symptoms would occur.
Pretty simply, that's pretty much it.
Fascinating.
So I'm curious to know about how we've been sitting here for about an hour and 6 minutes.
Yeah.
How has this experience been so far?
Pretty good. I was pretty nervous about it.
Yeah.
Which we talked about.
Yeah.
And you were like, you know, the fact that you're anxious about it is kind of a red flag. And I'm like, yeah, fair play.
I was a little worried.
But like PTSD is an anxiety based thing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you can't really talk about it without feeling anxious.
Cause you seem to be doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's cause, well.
But again.
So I've had.
That wasn't coffee, was it?
No, it is coffee.
actually, this wasn't coffee. This was just straight rum.
But I've had this coffee cup in all of my therapy sessions, essentially.
Oh.
And I use it for grounding. Grounding is like a thing that you do mm-hmm. to bring yourself back to where you're at.
Like Inception.
Sure.
The dreidel. No one got that.
I know.
We'll keep it going.
I've never seen Inception.
Oh, dude, do yourself a favor.
Fuck, dude. Let's come over and watch it. It's on like this weekend or something.
Sure.
It's a great movie.
No, it's
about dreams.
Playoffs.
Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, so grounding. I have this mug that I use, like I play with it when I'm talking about it. And it kind of like, I use the physical sensation to like ground myself to the present. Because if you can stay present, then you can avoid the symptoms of it.
Dude, that's one thing that I can relate to. I ate mushrooms in Amsterdam. I had coins in my pocket, and I just fucking kept rolling them around in my pocket. I was like,
if you're having a bad trip, you try and ground yourself.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you kind of keep anxiety at bay.
Yeah.
But no, like, when we first started this, I was shaking. I don't know if you guys noticed. My voice was a lot higher at the beginning as well.
You seem much more comfortable.
Yeah. Well, it started to become... Like,
Can we talk about Liz?
Yeah, sure.
Before we I just want to ask one question. Actually, you know what? Never mind. It doesn't really matter.
Are you sure?
We can continue. Yeah,
because like earlier,
it wasn't really a question. It was more so that I'm super happy that you're here and you're feeling, you know, relatively comfortable talking about all this because I had an experience. We talk a lot about who should we have on the show? Who's going to be a guest that's going to be able to talk comfortably enough about a subject to make other people go, oh, you know, I'm going through something similar and now I maybe can deal with it a little bit better. Or on the other side of things, somebody going, I have no idea. I know nothing about that. And now I feel more comfortable engaging in a conversation around that topic. I just had a girl at our launch party come up and she said she wanted to be a guest on the show. She said, I want to be a guest on the show. I have PTSD. And she said PTSD and she started bawling her eyes. Like she started crying so heavily. And she said the word, she didn't say anything else. She just started crying and she wanted to be a guest. And I'm thinking,
there's no way.
And I'm thinking, well,
there's no way.
I would love, like,
it would be great.
I want to help you so bad, but I want
to, like, I'm not prepared to deal with that.
Yeah.
I'm not a fucking, I want to stay away from as much faux therapy as possible because we're not therapists, right?
No,
and that's
I know. I agree with that. But also, like, Matt, maybe you can speak more on this, but part of, like, the therapy, the big part of it is talking about it, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
maybe she probably wasn't doing that for us.
Totally. But talking about it in an unprofessional environment when like, there's people who go to school for a long time to learn how to talk to people who are that vulnerable.
Yeah.
We're not that.
No, but
since there's a certain point in your therapy where it's beneficial. I'm at that point actually right now. And like I've been in an
and that's therapy. What I was that's what I was questioning you about when before this was coming up. I was like, are you sure you're cool with
this? So I'm cool with it, and then my therapist was like, actually for you at this point I think it would actually be a really good idea. And I was like, cool.
That's awesome.
I don't really want to text that to Jeremy because he might think I'm lying. No, just to be on the show.
No, I would never.
That was my thought because, like, I don't know. You get some, there's still some, like, stray thoughts that really don't fit in with my general, and I don't really know if they fit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, oh, I'll put the phone down. I'll just tell him in person.
So can we talk about Liz?
Yeah.
I find this very interesting. Liz, my sister-in-law, is a psychiatrist?
Psychologist. Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming your therapist is not her.
No, it's not Liz.
Because that would be super fucked up.
That would be, that would be like...
A conflict of interest.
Huge conflict of interest.
Like, she would, if that were true, Liz would be... I don't know what the psychological term of disbarred is.
She would not be allowed to practice.
It is a massive breach of ethics. Yeah.
Right. So she, I assume she tried to stay out of your, like out of talking to you about, at least your sessions with your therapist. Or...
Yeah. So like, it's kind of, when I talked to Liz about it, so she has the skill set that my therapist has.
Yes.
But she does, you guys now know more about what I've gone through than she does.
And that is super interesting.
Yeah.
Well, because that's a very interesting relationship to share.
Yeah, so the amazing thing about being in a relationship, if you have PTSD with a psychologist, is that they have a skill, so they know how to...
The patience.
Be the support.
Yeah.
Like, because a lot of times if you are in a relationship and you go to therapy for PTSD, they'll bring your spouse in and be like, so here's... what you should do as a spouse, like they'll kind of like
sort of couples. Like tips and tricks to, how to make sure that.
So she's like the perfect person because she knows all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She has no idea what my story is. She has no idea any of the, like.
Is there a part of that that makes it challenging though? Because you guys don't talk about it.
I don't talk about it with anyone.
You just
but
don't
she
talk
would
about
she period. Would understand right. that better than most.
Yeah. One of my questions about because I feel not like I would
have
it though.
I feel like I would have a hard time if Bridie was going through PTSD because I want to talk about everything, right? Yeah. And so if she had PTSD and wasn't talking to me about it, I would feel so.
But if you were a psychologist that knew that she probably shouldn't be talking to you about it,
I'd be like, that is okay. That's my psychologist. But I don't. That is totally okay.
I don't get. Like, I get that talking to the psychiatrist or psychologist is they have this these years of experience where that makes that valuable. But isn't not talking about it also detrimental?
Yeah, no, sorry. We don't like
not talking about
it to
your...
We don't completely avoid the subject.
Right.
We just don't talk about, like, what actually traumatized me. Like, so I'll be like, I'm feeling stressed right now about... You know, whatever. It's like a car drove by and I'm freaking out a little bit. And then we'll like talk about how I'm feeling or like how my therapy went and how it reacts to the, like how it kind of relates to the day. But we won't actually talk about what I talked about.
She's skilled at navigating the waters of what you're going through.
Knowing that she is skilled in navigating those waters, knowing that PTSD can have a very detrimental effect on relationships. Have you guys had any struggles with that in your relationship? Has it? You were saying you sent these letters home, and it totally shook her up.
Well, it would have if I was still at sea. Yeah,
right.
That one was more just good timing for not having issues. No, but we have like, I don't know, normal couple issues.
Yeah,
it's like, no, we don't need the heat on. It's fine. just put a sweater on. You know, like that type of. Yeah. That type of stuff. And we do, like, we have more serious conversations, but the serious conversations we have aren't about our past. It's more about how we're dealing with right now and how that's going to go into our future.
Which is also healthy.
Yeah. I think I'm so, like, I'm just so grateful that you guys can have that. Like, that you guys can have this really awesome relationship and this awesome relationship to what you're both what you're both dealing with, but what you're both dealing with. You know what I mean? Like the fact that she's a professional in that field, it's just so great. It's so great for you.
Yeah. I'm just like, really any healthy relationship with good communication is just tops for PTSD. But yeah, I just got really lucky. And just the way Liz and I interact with each other just on a personal level.
Yeah.
It's just...
I have a, like, speaking of Liz, do you, and you haven't shared what it is that causes your PTSD with her. Do you want to share it with us?
Yeah, I think so.
And you want to do that. It's not, you don't have to feel obligated to do it because I wouldn't want to put any pressure on, it doesn't matter what causes, it's about the experience. If you want to talk about it, then great, but I wouldn't want you to feel like you have to because you don't.
No, I would like to. I'd like to do it sober because the,
let's do it.
Like, I've talked to like 3 or 4 people about it at this point, but it's all, I've been just gone.
Yeah.
Right. Completely drunk. And they're like, why are you crying? And I'll be like, what? And then just, yeah.
So
let's hear it.
Is that happening now?
Yeah, let's do it right now.
Sure.
Good times. So I deployed to, you want to toss me those napkins actually?
Yeah.
Just in case. So I deployed to Libya with the Charlottetown. We initially went over to, I think our initial mission was to, like, get Canadians off the ground. And then so they're like, a ship can carry a lot of people. So we were on our way over. And then they were like, planes are way faster. And then so planes took all the Canadians out, but we were still over there. And so we were, the UN passed a resolution, a no-fly zone resolution over Libya to help the anti-Gaddafi forces fight the pro-Gaddafi forces as part of the whole Arab Spring that erupted. So we went over there and we were hanging out off of the coast of Libya, and we kept hailing vessels that were coming out of ports being like, hey, what's the situation like in the port? And then they would always radio back. You know, we'd have this quiet, like, questionnaire of, like, whatever. And we're like, what's security like in the port? And just a fun little story about that. Well, we did that. We hailed them once, and the guy got back, and he was like, yeah, security is good, good, very good, number one A+. And we're like, wicked.
So number one A+.
So we wrote that down verbatim.
Which in Libya means.
So anyway, so we wrote
Don't come.
Yeah, don't come.
So A+ is bad plus.
We wrote that down, and then the guys listening in the ops room down below were like, did you hear what they said? And then the other guy who was on watch with me, he goes, yeah. He said that security was good, good, very good, number one A+. And then the captain just kind of turns around and goes, the accent probably wasn't necessary.
I'm glad that the accent was totally actually a part of the experience.
Yeah. It's like he wasn't Italian, just so we're clear.
No, you did that pretty well.
Yeah, well, we heard it a lot.
Okay. Yeah. You had some practice. You've had some practice time.
And you get, like, really bored.
Of course, yeah.
Anyways, so, but we were over there, and we were kind of, we were radioing, we were talking to the ships coming out, and then eventually we got, the guys on the ground started contacting us, and they were like, you know, hey, you know, you don't need to radio ships. We can just give you all the information you need. And we're like, yeah, sure, man, whatever. Just, like, shoot us an email, I guess. And then they...
Soup's casual.
Yeah. Man, our military sounds cool.
Well, no, because we didn't want to give them any, like, contact us on this super secure channel.
Yeah, okay.
So they started giving us a bunch of information. And then we didn't know if any of that information was true and blah, 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 blah. So we were watching a civil war happen, essentially, for months. And one night we had verified the information that we were getting from these guys. Now it's like 2 months in, I guess, and 2 or 3 months in, I guess. And, we had these, like, have you ever been, like, downtown and you're like, man, what should I eat? So you just, like, Google restaurants, and then you get that Google Maps with, like, red dots of, like, all the,
yeah.
So we,
my subconscious just leads me to Willy's every time.
Anyways,
sorry.
But you know what it looks like, right? The Google Maps.
Yeah.
So we, just for ease of up-to-date maps, we just kind of used Google Maps and, like, had little drop boxes. But instead of restaurants, it was like, this is a tank platoon. This is a building full of dudes. We would drive around our little patrol box and look at the shore and just watch for things, try and, like, verify the information with the map we had. And I was on watch one night, and my lookout was like, hey, sir, come over here. I think I saw something. And we have these like normal binoculars and like superpowered binoculars. And he had the binoculars into the superpowered binoculars and was just like looking at the shore. He's like, I think I see something. I'm like, there's no fucking way, man. Like, this is such a MacGyver bullshit scenario.
That's not how those work, kind of deal.
Yeah, like the physics behind this shouldn't work.
He's looking through them backwards and everything looks like extra far away.
But yeah, so he looked down the bearing and there was flashes and I was like, oh, weird. So I took a bearing of it and then I went back to my map and I was like, oh, that could be a tank platoon. So like, and then I drove the ship somewhere else and then we waited and they shot again and we took the bearing and then eventually we triangulated the position. It was like, oh man, this is right on one of the Google Maps points. Let's blow it up. So I called it in and it was just like, it was super casual. Like it was essentially just making a phone call. And then so we relayed that up to the guy who was doing the air traffic control and he was Canadian and the fighters on station were also Canadian. So we had this like big old Canadian war effort push thing. And they flew in and they bombed the shit out of this tank platoon. And I was totally cool with it for like a while. Like when you're on deployment, it's just like, immediately afterwards, actually, I was like, that was so cool. I did my job. And then I was cool with it for a while. And then we got some bomb damage assessment videos from like an unrelated airstrike. And then so you kind of like see in infrared, like what happens when bombs drop. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did that. And then... but still, that was still where we were deployed, and like you're still kind of in that environment. So it's like this is all still normal. And then I got home, and one of the guys on board put together like this slideshow of like pictures taken by various press associations in the Libyan Civil War, and there was just this like series of photos where there was this guy who had this like bay sweater on, like Hudson's Bay has the cream and the color. And he had one of those sweaters on and he was running into a gunfight with machetes. And you're just clicking through and you're like, he's going to have a bad day. And then there's a pause in the pictures. And then you can see the pictures pick up again and he's dead. And his, I don't know, brother or something is just yelling at him. And he's like, he's trying to like bring him back to life or something. And then that's when I was like, I did that to people's families. Sorry.
That's okay, man.
And, yeah. And, life's been pretty shit since.
You knowing that you haven't spoken about that sober up until this point, and knowing that maybe quite a few people in your life, your immediate family or friends, don't know that. What's going through your mind right now?
Nothing really. Nothing.
Do you think that this experience, this last hour and a half, has been a good one?
Yeah. You know, right now, not maybe feeling the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's really important to talk about it.
So do I.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. And with good reason, too, because, like, it alienates you from the rest of kind of humanity, because, like, one of the big rules is, like, don't kill people. And, you know, I have. And it's really, it makes me feel really alone a lot of the time.
Not to separate from your experience with this, one of the things that was going through my mind as you came to the conclusion of that is that as a society, when we talk about war, and you're saying that while you're there, it just, it still feels normal. Like you're in that place where it's supposed to be normal to for that to be okay. And when we watch the news and we see politicians make decisions, people being pulled out, people being put in, and we all rally around those decisions without knowing that personal, that very, very personal and very visceral experience of what is going on, what is happening.
There's such a massive detachment.
Massive disconnect between a person's personal experience of being in that type of situation. Because we kind of think of it, or at least from my perspective, it seems like it's a collective. Canada or the U.S. or, you know, the coalition is going to take care of something. And we start thinking of it as this mob mentality idea.
I feel like almost, though, like when it comes to decisions like how to, like, should we send people to war or whatever, that, I mean, that should be part of the discussion, but I don't, like, it's really, really shitty to say it, especially considering my own personal experiences, but, like, I really don't think it should play that major of a role in the decision-making process, because otherwise, like, would we have sent anyone over for World War II?
Not necessarily that it should play a role, but for people to know that that is...
Just to put some more thought behind what you're looking at.
Because I understand that it can't really play a role, because you're right. Then we would... If you attach that personal thing to each and every person that's going, then you would go, God, no, we can't send anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess that was just a really... Because I find myself looking at it as a collective of going, Canada's going over to do this instead of the individual experience. And I think that, not that I need to look at it entirely as a collective or entirely as like an individual by individual basis, but that we need a mix of both, because it needs to be that. I feel that my perspective on those situations now is going to be much more mixed because of hearing a story like that.
What would you like to say, if anything, to anyone who might be listening right now who's going through a bit of a hard time with something, you know, some sort of traumatic experience in their life, whether or not they have PTSD or you know, like diagnosed with it or not? Just,
I guess I'd say go get help. Like you don't need to be alone when you're going through it. My first survival instinct, and I think a lot of people's first survival instinct is kind of just to like run and hide and like shelter themselves and protect themselves from anything that could kind of hurt you or make it worse. But yeah, you don't have to do it alone. Go get help.
Well, I just want to first off say thank you for coming in and sharing your experience with what you've been going through for the last few years. I feel like coming into the room earlier this evening and really not knowing much at all about PTSD, I feel like I learned a lot.
That's it for today.
That's it for today.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.